Hi everyone. Good to see y'all. My name is Reverend Leanne, or you can call me Leanne or Reverend. My pronouns are she and they, and I'm zooming in from Ramatushland, otherwise known as San Francisco. So it's good to see you all. Let's begin by arriving. For me, as the body is always present, reflects the first foundation of mindfulness, which is awareness of the body in the body. So, bringing your attention and then sustaining your attention on a posture point or two, or a breath point or two. For instance, in the body, perhaps the weight, wherever you feel it most connected to a chair, a cushion, the floor. In the breath, perhaps with where the air touches a nostril or left or right, or the beginning or the middle or the end, where you feel at the back of your throat on an inhale or an exhale or both. So just pick a point or two, and then the best way to build up concentration, which will calm the mind and the heart, and actually the result of which will be ease, body ease. So this is why concentration is a great beginning practice for any period of meditation. So of course you could be sitting down, lying down, standing or walking, whatever posture is working for you. So the invitation is to connect to a posture or breath point. It's called an anchor point, and then just keep on steadying. Constancy is really important to connect with and then stabilize so that you have deep concentration. So, applying the awareness on a point and then sustaining that awareness. And then, whenever you go off, you just start again by reapplying and staying with the sustaining. And also, just offer that that sustaining probably does take a little effort. And the invitation is to make it an easeful sustaining, not on pushing down or gripping at. Staying steady, more, I like to say, my word, and use whatever works for you, resting in the sustaining. So you apply the awareness and then you just rest right there until you go off, and then you just come back, rest some more. Feel free to stay with your meditation as it is, or if you'd like to be part of this practice, then I'll offer here. You need to really have a sense of your experience of practicing concentration of awareness of the posture or the breath. What is the knowing? It doesn't have to be words per se, but of the doing, of the efforting, of the applying of the instructions I gave. So the application of the instructions. Again, continue with your own meditation as it is, or next point of invitation is to really feel the settling into your meditation. I myself just noticed that my shoulders were up, and then I intentionally just relaxed a bit more. And so my body settled into my posture. Is it again? Is it more? I don't know. And what's important to me at this moment is the realization of that settledness into this posture of awakening. Settle into how this meditation provides you with rest, settledness, composure. Just let yourself realize what is here. All right, as we're coming to the close of our formal meditation, if you can celebrate the time you've taken, the effort you've made to be present in this body, this heart, and this mind as it is. All right. That was enlivening for people. All right. I think we'll just go straight into the Dharma component, right, Emiko? Okay. All right. Tonight I wanted to talk about wisdom as applied to queerness. So, wisdom shows up in several places in Buddhism, of course. One is what would be called the two wings of Buddhism, right? Which is wisdom and compassion. So it's very fundamental to Buddhism. And, as I like to say, you want to develop them both so that you can have some capacity of not only the know their strength, but to also be able to use one or the other appropriately so that you go where you need to go. So sometimes a little bit more wisdom is needed to turn this way, and sometimes a little compassion is needed to turn that way. So we want to really strengthen and know those and be able to use them wisely or use them as appropriately. And then wisdom also shows up in the six paramitas, or in the Zen tradition is six. In the Theravada tradition, there's 10 of them. And wisdom or prajna shows up. And in Zen in particular, there's a sutta, right, called Prajnaparamita. Paramita is or the paramis in Pali. Is to cross over. And the paramitas in Zen are actually considered the six characteristics that a bodhisattva would have, right? And that's dana or generosity, sila or virtue or ethical conduct, or I like to say compassionate connection, kshanti, which is patience, forbearance, tolerance, virya is energy, jhana, as in concentration or meditation, and then prajna, wisdom. And Trungpa Rinpoche says prajna, as in prajnaparamita, is the knowledge, as in the Heart Sutra, the Heart of Transcendent Knowledge Sutra. So it's very much helps us to understand, even though the Heart Sutra might seem a bit cold, it is called the Heart Sutra because, again, in Buddhism, heart and mind are not separate. So I know that many of us in the West would think of wisdom as mostly intellectual knowing, but and we're well aware that it's also a body knowing, right? A gut feeling is another way to put wisdom. Thich Nhat Hanh says that prajna is, as relate to the paramitas, is understanding, right? Versus knowledge, because sometimes knowledge we have a sense of grasping at information and knowing, as opposed to understanding something well. And then Norman Fisher, one of the San Francisco Zen Center past abbots, sees it as twofold. It's both the faculty to see clearly things as they are, and then living from this knowing. So I really appreciate that. That wisdom is not just some intellectual or even body knowing, but it's actually an enactment from that knowing. And so the practice of the paramita is the perfection of all those qualities, right? We're practicing to perfect them. They're aspirations, they're not shoulds. And so, and then Edward Kanzi, it's also in the list of the five faculties, wisdom. And so I'm going to actually talk from around or with that as a framework. And so Edward Kanzi says that knowledge is threefold. One is, excuse me, wisdom is threefold. One is that knowledge, learning kind of wisdom, which comes from reading the sutras, studying or taking classes, listening to Dharma talks, memorizing chants and reciting chants and sutras, and knowing the lists, right? So that makes sense. And then there's what's called reflection wisdom, knowing through experience, right? So it's not just the intellectual idea or concept, but it's really knowing through experience. And so the experience, while it is considered, because we think about it and we kind of figure out how it works in our experience, it is considered a discursive kind of reflection. So we can also do that by interacting with others around it, like with Kalyanamitras, our spiritual friends, with our peers, with discussion with teachers. And then the third is that wisdom that's developed through meditation, bhavana, the knowing, understanding without averting or turning away from. So in the meditation that just happened, I gave you some instruction. So that's taking that in is a kind of learning, kind of intellectual, right? Oh, and I said some words about this is how concentration is developed. So these are instructional. When you give meditation instruction, it's to support people or guidance. It support people so that they have some sense of what they're doing. So it's a learning. So the taking in that information is intellectual. And then I asked you to say, okay, what is the feeling, the result of that? By that, like the your experience of it. And then the last is I asked you to just realize what the meditation, what the instruction was, or your meditation experience at the moment. So in a way, those are the three. I try to, give you the sense of the three as a meditator in your meditation practice. So now I want to apply these three, right? Learning or intellectual knowledge, reflection knowledge, and then meditation knowledge in terms of queerness. And to me, it's about how do we know a queerness or how do we rest? What is the wisdom of being queer? Edward Kanzi and the five faculties are writing on it. He says, the mainstream of Buddhist tradition has always greatly esteemed learning. Our attitude to the apple of knowledge differs from that of many Christians. On the whole, we regard it as rather more nourishing than baneful. This wisdom is not the wisdom that can be found in the untutored child of nature, the corny sage of the backwoods, or the self-made philosopher of the suburbs. It can operate only after a great deal of traditional information has been absorbed, a great deal of sound learning acquired. So it does begin with that. And so I think when I first had some sense that I was queer, right, I studied a lot. What was queerness? I went for knowledge, I try to figure out what is queerness, right? What is being a lesbian? Because that's why I, thought, oh, I am. Though for 6 months I was bi because I wasn't quite ready to go there, right? In terms, this is a long time ago. This is like, I don't know, 80 something, right? So, I was a volunteer at the Great Rape Crisis Network Eugene, Oregon, and that was my first, well, my first regular and intentional experience that I knew of queer people. And I remember, I was run by several lesbians that were key staff member. And at the time, this is just before, on the cusp of my, knowing that or thinking I was a lesbian or realizing I was a lesbian. I was a little bit clueless. Learning comes from cluelessness for sure, because I remember just thinking, wow, these lesbians, they're just so nice. They're such nice people, because whenever I saw them, they came in and they hugged each other and they kiss each other in the cheek and they asked how they were, and I was just like, wow, lesbians are just nice people. And then I will say, in the 40 hours of training, they really worked on the intersectionality, though that word wasn't used then, of all the oppressions. And that was a training on homophobia and heterosexism. So I'm not really sure we had that word then either, or I don't remember from them. But I remember the trainer passing around a picture, and she said I was oppressed. And I looked at the picture and like, I don't understand how she was oppressed. And then she said, I was made to wear a dress, right? And this is, I don't know this person anymore. All these years, this is a long time ago. So I don't know, in the early day, we at that time did not talk about being trans. So I don't know if that came from that, but it was very much where it started to remember me to think about, oh yeah, my mother made me wear a skirt in high school, and at least 3 times a week, because I would have just worn pants the whole time. And then once I stopped doing that, I had a rebellious time, of course. And so then I stopped, then I lost my allowance, right? So I could then reframe my experience. It just felt like my mother was being irrational and mean. But now I understood, oh yeah, this is like an oppression that I experienced too, right? So that kind of learning from trainings and stuff like that helps us to start going, oh, this is the experience of being queer. And then I, also ended up in areas that I would learn more about it. One of the board members of Rape Crisis taught at the college. It was in Eugene, Oregon, University of Oregon. And so I became a TA, and there certainly were a lot of lesbian who are other TAs, and one of them and I hooked up, and that was my coming out then, So of course then I did also a lot of readings of queer books. So this is these are ways of learning about queerness so that it made it easier, right? So learning is really important for us to understand conditions, both a kind of heart kind of understanding and a structure understanding. So next is reflection wisdom, knowing through experience, so not just concepts and ideologies. So this is from Buddhanet says, so what, according to Buddhism, is wisdom? The highest wisdom is seeing that in reality, all phenomena are incomplete, impermanent, and not self. This understanding is totally freeing and leads to the great security and happiness, which is called nirvana. However, the Buddha doesn't speak too much about this level of wisdom. It's not wisdom if we simply believe what we are told. True wisdom is to directly see and understand for ourselves. So that's the part I'm going to focus on. Now, early part of knowing that I was a lesbian was very much discussing it, right? That's part where Edward Conze also talked about it's a discursive kind of reflection where we discuss things with Kalyana Mitra, my, the other TAs, the lesbians at Rape Crisis Network. Those were my Kalyana Mitras at the time. We didn't have that word for it, but that's what they were, right? For me, anyway, looking back. So coming out stories 80s, almost, hi, I'm a lesbian. What's your coming out story? That used to be much bigger. I don't know if it's still big or not, because I don't know. I don't hang out with people who, especially these days, because of the online thing, where they haven't been out for many years. So yeah, coming out stories are really important ways of discussing that. Doing queer identify things religiously, right? Pride parades, bars. This is the 80s still, folks. So 80s and 90s. In fact, I saw Emily at of the Indigo Girls at the Rose, if you've ever been to Eugene, Oregon. I think it's closed now, or maybe it's not closed. But anyways, so really hanging out in environment in which lesbians were is really part of this kind of reflective kind of knowing. I went through a lot of different hairstyles that was, more dykey, right? I was the classic Asian, good Asian girl. I had bangs and long hair, and of course it got all chopped off, and I had to buy level again because it was the 80s and 90s. Yeah, see, Amy's relating or nodding at least, if not relating. And then in the 80s and 90s, there was a we talked about we were very, very much narrow, in my opinion, in retrospect. But we talk about the queer spectrum, and I was androgynous, but I was not a butch or femme because I was just, reflecting the patriarchy. That's the kind of feminism that I was in, that whatever wave that was. But I was very clear. I was androgynous, right? And then, of course, part of that reflection is the kind of partners you end up with and who you date, right? So that's part of reflection, and a lot of discussions about that. All right. In a way, I would call it an actively clarifying aspect. I would put that in this, what he calls reflecting, right? So you really enact your ideas from your ideas of what is. So you it's a lived experience, or it's the exploration of a lived experience. Because there's to me, in a way, it could be reactive, because it's kind of binging on things and just over-identifying, which I don't think is bad. It's just, to me, there was a very much at that time, I was, if someone called me dyke, I would have said, fuck you, So I would have, sorry, I was supposed to swear at Spirit Rock, but I do sometimes. So I would just be angry because I felt it was a need to defend my identity. I think this is part of how we reflect and what helps us then to have a certain settledness, which I think is what is developed through meditation, or the framing for it in terms of wisdom is developed through meditation. I will say, perhaps we could call it developed through an awareness that is inclusive of the whole, right? Of a full understanding of both what it is as a lived experience and what it is in a structural sense, and what it is with some longevity, because, and then with a response versus a reaction. I think my early time, there was a lot of reaction, and certainly being queer was not as acceptable, even though in some places it was obviously more acceptable than others. But I remember when we boycott Visa, I think we're pretty sure it was Visa, right? Because they were homophobic, and also they were against marriage for queers, and even families as queers. And now, when NOMA happened, you're like, wow, I never thought I would see that in my lifetime, right? So in the 80s and 90s, it was really very much a different kind of a different environment. So a way then you could say the meditation to meditation, or wisdom through meditation, developed through meditation, is the knowing or understanding without averting or turning away from. Those are Edward Kanzi. So, I have here, it's just like with meditation and other forms of practice, like bowing, chanting, mindfulness, awareness practice. This expect can't be forced or rushed. It takes time and a lot of being with and going through trials and errors. And even in the beginning when I started practicing, you know, I was obsessive about retreats, you know, and then with time, and then I was obsessive about how I should go through a retreat. And with time, you start to rest in the knowledge you've gained, not just intellectually. In fact, you want to actually, in my experience, I've learned to rest much more in the being in retreat, as opposed to trying to figure out how I should do retreats, right? So it's the same. I don't figure out how I should be a lesbian. Doesn't mean there isn't still confusion or areas in which I'm not sure. Like, to be honest, you know, the retreat that Kristen talked about that I co-led with Bruni Davila of the LGBTQ2SA+, I think we called it, at IRC, you know, I came out as a they, as a gender non-conforming. I had, you know, used that before, but then in the early days, I think, or the earlier days of trans being more acceptable, that was a way to say that you were transgendered. And so when I, you know, I used it as non-conforming, I didn't want to appropriate from that, but I think as time has gone on, it has really become the spectrum, you know, it keeps changing though, folks. And it's, you know, in fact, my girlfriend the other day, I say, what exactly is genderqueer again? And we have to look it up because it keeps changing, you know? And in part, I'll tell you, we're doing this series called Transcending to, you know, to really uplift voices in all this hatred. And honestly, and I'll say it at my group starting next Monday, you know, it's that I'm still a little trepidatious around all that because there's a lot there that I don't really understand. By that, I don't mean I don't support. It's just it's a changing territory that I'm not that familiar with. And I want to have more to meet that. Right, as opposed to, and it's not just about getting the knowledge, so that would be useful. It is about entering and exposing myself to being able to have more complexity and more to rest in the information, not as in getting it, but as in knowing it more deeply by study and by experiencing, because we'll be bringing in some of the people who are in the book to give talks. So it's not just theorizing or idealizing or acting on queerness. And not that these are wrong, but I think it takes an awareness that we need to reflect on and understanding our queerness in context. What is it? It's fine. Like my example about using they, right? To really kind of hold it and use it in context. Not just for myself, but for the community and the history of queerness itself, right? How do we don't do this alone. I think that's the other piece about wisdom, is that we realize that it isn't a wisdom that it's you can't, knowledge is not something you get yourself, right? Who wrote that book? Who made that movie? Who, you know, who else shows up at X, Y, and Z that you use as a way to understand queerness? We don't do this alone. And luckily we've had a long history, and uncovering that history is part of how we uplift queerness and our identity and our community. Edward Kanzi says, wisdom is, of course, only a very approximate equivalent of prajna. To the average person nowadays, wisdom seems to denote a compound made up of such qualities as sagacity, prudence, a well-developed sense of values, serenity, and sovereignty over the world, won by the understanding of the mode of its operation. The Buddhist concept of wisdom is not unlike this, but more precise. Wisdom penetrates into dharma, small d meaning phenomena. Wisdom penetrates into phenomena as they are in themselves. It disperses the darkness of delusion, which covers up the own being of dharma. So wisdom comes through experience, right? As we live, as our experience, the phenomena that is me and you and gay pride or whatever, right? The things that we interact with, when we let that reveal itself to us, right? As opposed to just going out to grasp at what we think is queerness or phenomena, then actually that disperses our delusion. Right? In Buddhism, the worst sin is ignorance, right? And ignorance as relate to wisdom in this sense. Right? And it's our delusion that covers up, when it says covers up the own being of dharma, I mean that each thing has its own value, its own presentation. And the more that we open up to receiving that, including phenomena that's me, that shows up as me, the more we actually gain wisdom. Like, for instance, you know, that when I came out as they, it was really a settling moment for me, because I, you know, and yet at the same time, it was resting in, okay, this is one way to identify. And then the other thing was that I heard that, and you know, I was one of the teachers, and I, you know, at IRC you always have a opening circle right before the retreat, and everyone says something. Sometimes there's a prompt, and then at the end there's a circle. And so, you know, as a co-teacher, of course, I have power. I was just saying, oh, it's in this environment I felt like I could settle and say, oh, this is how I understand my queerness at this moment. And that felt really connecting. But then other people said, oh, having heard that, it really supported them to say, what is my identity right now? You know, sometimes we fight so hard in oppression to say, this is who I am, that we forget at times that what we're fighting for is the openness of being ourselves. And at times, for sure, labels and identity really is useful to have a sense of, okay, I worked hard at this, or this is a way that reflects my understanding of myself. You know, I had two Thai American friends who spent the first 18 years of their life in Thailand. And then their mother was white American, their father was Thai, right? And so they grew up speaking Thai and all that. And then they came to the US and they said they heard the word lesbian. And they were like, oh, that's who we are. Oh, they're twins, so there's a lot of we's, right? And they were like, oh, that's who we are. Because at that time, for them, there was no word that was lesbian. There was slangs for butch and femme, and butch and femme actually was really freeing in some way when I went to Thailand. You know, like butch and femme just held hands and everything. Nobody talked about it, but they could be out in that way. But it was, again, this is in the 80s. It was very binary seeming, right? And so for them, when they heard lesbian, it really helped them to kind of say, oh, I don't have to be just butch or femme to be queer, right? As a way of presenting, a way of being, right? Again, they were androgynous in those days. That was the word when you didn't feel like you fit in this binary, or it was in my circle, right? So it's really important, of course, to have labels and to have identity label that we can rest in. And our practice is to meet each other, right, as we identify and as we present. And then to, I also think our practice is to be curious and to be open and to really let phenomena arise and reveal themselves to you. My favorite Dogen quote, of course, is Dogen says, to think that you go forth and experience the myriad things is delusion. That the myriad things come forth and present themselves and experience themselves is enlightenment. Right? So letting the phenomena, which may be my emotion or my thoughts or my sensation, right? Those are phenomena also. So instead of going for this kind of knowledge, which is important, but not all of wisdom, is a knowledge of grasping at understanding or some solidity, though again, at times it's really helpful and it's even needed at times when we're being threatened, for instance. And it is about reflecting on where's the harm, where's there not harming, and using it. Right? So to not be used by labels, right? To use label but not be used by them. And then the other is to really rest in not knowing, right? And let ourselves and let everyone and all beings reveal themselves to us. Okay, Reginald Ray, in the presence of Master, says, this is about the paramitas, but I think it's important. When we say that paramita means transcendent action, we mean in the same sense that actions or attitudes performed in a non-egocentric manner. Transcendental. I don't know why English seems very hard tonight. Transcendental does not refer to some external reality, but rather to the way in which we conduct our lives and perceive the world, either in an egocentric or a non-egocentric way. The six paramitas are concerned with the effort to step out of egocentric mentality. So again, I really appreciate Norman Fisher's framing. That's a faculty to see clearly things as they are, as they reveal themselves, or and living with or from this knowledge. So when we're settled in our queerness in its many forms, bringing awareness to how we are in it and in the context of our individual lives, our families, our community lives, and the world of queerness itself, the community, the broader community, then perhaps we can say that this is perfecting the wisdom of what it means to be queer.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.